right now. It is clear sailing to Brooklyn, New York. It is time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur, of course, joins us on a Monday morning. Good morning, Arthur.
And good morning to you all.
And
I'm now from Texas, so I say you all.
I was gonna say.
Actually, it reminds me of a conversation I had the other day with several other Brooklynites, one of whom still calls a section of the borough South Brooklyn. Did you ever hear that, South Brooklyn?
No.
You got to be old. South Brooklyn refers to south of the original Dutch town of Brooklyn. Brooklyn, the borough, which is Kings County, New York State, Kings County, was originally six small towns, one of which was called Brooklyn, spelled the Dutch way, B-R-E-U-C-K-L-I-N. And there is a town in what is now the Netherlands called Brooklyn. Anyway, I thought it was interesting that this man, an Italian guy, was saying he was from South Brooklyn. I said, you understand how much that ages you, because I don't think anybody under probably 60 knows what South Brooklyn is. The only reason I know what South Brooklyn is, it was a strange thing to call a place, even when I was a kid, is because my father had a lot of friends in South Brooklyn. So it was very Italian.
So
Carroll Gardens, Cobble Hill, not Park Slope so much, Red Hook for sure. These were all South Brooklyn, lumped together. Now, the real South Brooklyn, and I always questioned this when I was a quick kid, the real South Brooklyn is where I grew up, Marine Park, because you can't go any further south in Brooklyn than Marine Park. It's edging on Jamaica Bay.
So where's Seagate relative to
this? Seagate is... Seagate. You mean Seagate is... You know, I always confuse Seagate and Seagirt.
So do I, but I think it's
Seagate is far, far. Would you call that South Brooklyn? I guess you would, but it was Seagate was always this gated community. I don't think it's a very rich community these days. I think it's totally middle class, and I'm not sure what the ethnicity is. I'm pretty sure.
I had Irish Italian living there.
It's not really white anymore, but in any case, they have like their own little private security force and blah blah. So and you need to own a home there or be a guest to get in.
All right, I just wondered where the far west. I just wondered where it was because I had.
Well, it's South Brooklyn.
Okay, that was it.
Yeah, but anyway.
Food, y'all, you
it,
all.
Y'all, right, that's how we started off with them. Glad you have such a good memory, because I certainly don't. So I think I do remember that a few weeks ago, I don't know how we got on the subject of Lasang Souchong tea, but it's a smoky Chinese tea, and I don't like it very much, and I have this huge tin of it. I think it's more about the tin that I'm keeping it than the tea. But I said, oh, you know, maybe if I used Lapsang Souchong tea underneath my ribs, I would get a little smoky taste. So I'm in the supermarket. By the way, ribs are on sale everywhere I look. You know, not at my local butcher, but all the supermarkets have $1.90 around here, have $1.99 a pound for ribs. I don't know what it is by you, but it's probably about the same, maybe even a little less. And a whole rack of ribs. I don't buy baby backs. I don't buy... baby backs aren't meaty enough for me. They're nice, but... And I don't buy St. Louis, which is just a basically regular ribs, but trimmed differently, sort of trimmed up. I buy a full rack of ribs, which always has a little flap of meat on the bottom, which I like. And the only thing you have to do to this, and it should weigh 6 or 7 pounds, and a full rack of ribs will feed, I would say, at least 4 people. Mr. Harnett could only eat two ribs. I managed to get three now. And a full rack of ribs, I forget how many there are, five, seven. There must be at least 12, maybe 14 ribs. I forget how many ribs there are to a rack. So you if you don't have outdoor space, it's to get a little smoke flavor on them is not easy. And I'm in the supermarket the other day, and this man and I are waiting for what shouldn't have been special orders, because they had a big sign, $1.99 a pound, these ribs, and he was getting a pork butt, which was also, I think, that was even cheaper, like it was like $1.19 a pound. And I said, well, what are you going to do with it? And he said, oh, I'm going to smoke it. Well, this is Park Slope. A lot of people have outdoor space, and there are days when you can smell the smoke in the air. In my backyard here, there's a new couple living, and I smelled smoke from them the other day. But then again, I also smelled horrible kerosene lighter fluid. So anyway, he inspired me with his. He had an actual smoker, but he inspired me to try this Lapsang Souchong thing. So I did, and it kept the ribs nice and moist, as you can imagine. But it didn't. I don't think add any flavor whatsoever. To the ribs. I have been doing these ribs with a little bit of apple juice on the bottom. Now I realize you don't need anything, I don't think anything with flavor. It smells up the kitchen nice. And the tea smell, along with the marinade I did the ribs in, made the kitchen smell nice, but I didn't taste any smoke.
How much tea?
So I can't. Pardon me?
I'm struck by the experiment. I'm wondering how much tea you used.
Well, so here's the deal. I have this very large roasting pan into which a full rack of ribs does fit. I have no outdoor space. So I think this is a pretty good way of making ribs, even if you do. But anyway, if you don't have a smoker, I have a rack that fits on the bottom, and I put just enough liquid underneath the rack to not touch the rack, but just to skim the bottom of the pan. It's plenty of liquid. It doesn't have to be a lot. It's just to create steam. And then I put the rack of ribs, which you can put a rub on, or I'm going to tell you what I did as a marinade. And then you put the rack of ribs on. You cover the whole roasting pan with foil. And I put it in a 275-degree oven, low oven. And this rack of ribs took 2.5 hours. At 2 hours, it was reasonably tender, but I like mine very tender. So I cooked it another half an hour, and I read this somewhere recently on the Internet. Somebody said, oh, I do the does it bend test, meaning he stabs, and I do now, stab a two-prong meat fork into the ribs, sort of in the middle, and if it really sags, then you know that the meat's really tender. I guess you could taste one. And then I let them cool to room temperature. If I'm doing this in the morning and I was going to eat them in the evening or the late afternoon, I just leave them out. Of course, if you're going to do it like the next day, once the ribs cool down, put them covered into the refrigerator, and you can finish them off the next day. Now, if you do have a barbecue, you can finish them off on the barbecue, and that's great. I don't have a barbecue, so I do it in a 450-degree oven. I put whatever glaze I'm going to put on the bottom part of the ribs. Oh, by the way, I meant to say the only preparation you need to do with a rack of ribs is there is a membrane on the bottom of the ribs, not on the meat side, but on the bone side. You'll see what I mean when you see the ribs. And that needs to be, it doesn't need to be, but it's much better if you take it off. And I always have to grab, you get one edge of it loose, maybe you'll need a knife to do that. And then if you take it, grab it with a paper towel, just to be able to grab it tight, usually it'll come off in one or two pieces. is not a difficult job at all. And I always, when I'm glazing them at the end, so that made me think of that I omitted that, is I start them with the bone side up. And I brush it with whatever I'm glazing the ribs with. And if they were cold ribs, you know, like out of the refrigerator, I would put them in a 450-degree oven to start them. And then after about 15 minutes, then you can start the glazing process, which is putting them into the broiler. So I brush on whatever I'm glazing with, put them under the broiler, usually not too close. Usually after about 2 minutes, you get a nice glaze. Then I put more glaze on and put it back under the broiler. And you'll see how it's going. You don't want it to burn. On the other hand, you do want it to caramelize. You're going to do a glaze by definition to make it shiny and glaze. It's going to have some kind of sugar in it. Anyway, then when the bone side is done, flip them over using tongs or your meat fork and do the other side, the pretty side, the meat side. And you do the same thing. Brush it with whatever and put it under the broiler, 2 minutes, 3 minutes at the most. Depends on your broiler. It depends on how far away from the heat it is. Excuse me. And they're delicious, depending on what you put on them. Now, you could just put plain old barbecue sauce out of a jar if you like that kind of rib. I've been toying with other kinds of seasoning. I did this sort of, I don't know, South Asian kind of seasoning a few months back. I'm not so sure I would do that again, and I've lost the recipe, and I forgot where I got it from, so that's that. Then I've been also using a lot this Asian marinade. Now, I'm not calling it Asian marinade. I've mentioned this before because it's a recipe that came with my new little mini processor. And I never read the instruction books because I know how to do it. But I did in this case for whatever reason. And there was this Asian marinade that intrigued me. And the recipe that it comes with, the recipe suggests that you use this on a trimmed pork tenderloin. I think I've talked about this because I never cook pork tenderloin, but I did in this case, and I would do that again because with this marinade and glaze, it was really good, and it was even better, I thought, the second day for sandwiches. So, or you could put it on a salad. It was very lean protein, pork tenderloin. So this is the so-called Asian marinade, and you can adjust the seasoning a little bit if you like. I've been doing it pretty much as written, except I'm no longer measuring the amount of ginger root. I would say I would use maybe 3 inches of ginger root, a thick piece, and peeled and cut up into chunks, thrown into my mini processor. 2 enormous cloves of garlic. Don't worry, Jill, you won't taste a lot of garlic in the end, and this makes a lot. 2 large cloves of garlic, throw in the processor, and now pulse the garlic and ginger together until it's really, really fine. This is just to give them a head start. This will be processed a lot more. Now, to the processor, add 1/2 cup of low-sodium soy sauce. I suppose you could use full-sodium soy sauce, but it's not necessary to have all that sodium. It's plenty salty as it is. 1/3 cup of whatever neutral vegetable oil you use. I use canola more than most things, so I have canola in the house. 1/4, and now I'm going to get comments from the Peanut Gallery about how canola, we shouldn't be eating canola oil. But, you know, I do.
Is that true?
I don't know. You know, you can read a bad thing about... I once wrote a treatment for a screenplay. This is 40 years ago, maybe more. And more. And the point of this whole thing was that every food had been found, it was a science fiction thing, every food except bananas had been found to have some kind of carcinogen or toxin. And so the world was eating all its nutrition out of tablets, green tablets. Now, then a movie came out with this similar theme, and that was the end of my selling a screenplay.
Was that Soylent Green?
Soylent Green. I just remembered the name. Remember Soylent Green?
Yeah, Charlton Heston was in that.
Well, you know, he wasn't in my movie.
No.
But I had the idea.
You would have Jimmy Stewart in your movie.
I don't know. But let me finish this recipe before I get complaints about that, too. So we have a nice hunk of ginger, a couple cloves of garlic, a half a cup of low-sodium soy sauce, a third of a cup of whatever neutral vegetable oil you use, a quarter of a cup of hoisin sauce, which you can buy in the supermarket. Years ago, I have to say, we recipe writers would say, or ketchup. And there are a lot of old recipes around calling for ketchup in Chinese recipes when they really meant hoisin sauce. But now hoisin is available, I think, in every supermarket. A quarter of a cup of sesame oil, the Asian type of sesame oil, which has a really beautiful, toasty smell. And by the way, don't buy a huge amount, but buy an economical amount, a sized bottle, because it does hold up a lot longer than other kinds of oil.
That is true. So yeah, and do you use the hot ever, or do you just...
Hot what?
Sesame oil.
No, I just use pure old sesame oil.
Okay.
With nothing added.
The hot one's always much smaller.
I didn't know there was a hot.
Yeah, much smaller, yeah.
Oh. So, and then there's a quarter of a cup of, this is essential, vinegar. Now, I do use rice wine vinegar.
Okay.
And a quarter of a cup. But if you only have white distilled vinegar, it's okay. I doubt that you'd want to put white wine vinegar in here, only because white wine vinegar tends to be expensive and you don't want to waste it in here. But plain old distilled vinegar is fine. However, if you're buying rice wine vinegar, and I do keep it in the house, be careful. There's now, I see in the supermarket, rice wine vinegar flavored with salt and sugar. It's sold as sushi vinegar sometimes.
Yeah, it's rice, you know, and you're absolutely right to point that out. People, and sometimes it's hard to read the labels because they're in another language, but you should really make sure that you're getting the pure stuff, not the adulterated.
It's like never, ever, 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 ever buy cooking wine, which is just really bad wine made worse with salt added. Sometimes sugar there, too. So, you know, they sell that in the supermarket because it I don't know, it's allowed. I don't know what the alcohol content is. It must be very low. But in any case, the last ingredient for my Asian marinade, and let me quick review, a big hunk of ginger, two cloves of garlic, a half a cup of soy sauce, a third of a cup of oil, a quarter of a cup of hoisin, a quarter of a cup of sesame oil, a quarter of a cup of vinegar, and a good hit of cayenne pepper. If you don't want if you don't like a really hot thing, be careful. But I have to say, I have used as much as a rounded quarter of a teaspoon of cayenne pepper and still didn't think it was hot. So even a half a teaspoon of cayenne pepper is probably not too much. The whole thing is very well balanced. You can decide how much pepper you want, but you know, it's got the sesame oil, the saltiness, the right, pungency. It's really a well-balanced. Now, so I have marinated tenderloins in this and then roasted them at 475 degrees for 20-25 minutes, turning them once in the middle of that. I've also used this marinade on chicken thighs. Fabulous. I let them marinate overnight, actually, in the refrigerator, and put them on the baking sheet. I'm now putting things like this that have a glaze or whatever sauce thing on a rack on a baking sheet because the bottom gets a lot browner. It doesn't sit in its juices.
Right.
Not that that's a bad thing necessarily, but
it does get brown. I have,
but I am enjoying the crispier bottom. So you get that if you put it on a rack. And I do the chicken at 450, size 450, for 40 minutes.
And that all sounds really good, and I just have to throw this in. I would like you to experiment. Get yourself a small thing of hot, since you're using cayenne anyway, get yourself a small thing of hot sesame oil and see if that doesn't give it more, shall we say,
oomph,
punch. Yeah, because you know that I'm not Mrs. Hot here. And I have always found that using that is...
Oh. Well, I'll see if I see it. But I must say I have a large quantity of pure sesame oil.
You don't. You have to use the pure sesame. The hot comes... If the pure sesame oil comes in large, the hot comes in mini. You know, so it's,
all right.
it's
well,
only a small
I'll
thing
take
anyway.
A look. It's just that I buy these things in Chinatown.
Right.
Where an enormous quantity costs the same as a tiny jar in a market in the neighborhood, so it's worth everyone. There's an amazing supermarket in our Brooklyn Chinatown called the Fei Long Market. It not only the produce and the fish and the meat, mainly pork, but all kinds of things. There's also a food court next to it, where there's a man making pulled noodles in soup that you can have all different kinds of soup with hand-pulled noodles. There's a roast shop. Oh, there's all kinds of things. So it's like another world. I went all the way to Singapore to experience this. Singapore is famous for food courts like this. And then I come home and realize it's in my backyard. And there's air conditioning here.
I'm surprised you haven't set up a Korean dinner for tomorrow when the two big guys get together.
This is Brooklyn.
Yeah.
We don't have to go out of our way for Korean food.
Right. And
there's actually a new Korean restaurant. I wouldn't say it's around the corner, but maybe five blocks away. And I keep meaning to go there. Maybe I should just do that tomorrow night.
And, you have to do it. Isn't it tonight?
I don't know. It's their time, not Mark.
Right. So add 12 hours. Right now it's bed.
So if you did it tonight, you could celebrate it for tomorrow, and just in case things go bad.
You have to do it tonight.
I must say, I do like the cuisine.
So and quickly, about
we have a lot of South Koreans in New York, and just in general in New York. You know, we have Koreatown in Manhattan,
and there's Koreatown in L.A. for years. I mean, since before you were born.
Well, I was witness to the original Korean migration in the 70s. I was living in Manhattan, and all the Greek and Italian produce markets were closing because all their children had become lawyers and doctors, and who wants their parents in the produce business if you can afford to help them? So, and then what happened was very ambitious Koreans started coming over, and they were willing to keep open for 24 hours so they could pay the high rents. Rents were now going up in Manhattan, and even though it was a sort of depressed period. And anyway, et cetera, et cetera. The Koreans took over the neighborhood grocery business in New York, and now we actually refer to them as Korean markets. And I have a very good friend who's Korean, and I asked, and she lives in my neighborhood here, and I said, oh, is it racist of me or to say the Korean market? She says, no, I call it the Korean market too. Mr. Kim, he's a very nice man. He not only owns the grocery, but he owns the nail salon and the fish market, and I don't know, probably the laundry too.
And that was definitely the beginning of the whole nail salon Korean markets. You know, actual, as you said, not only 24 hours a day, but fresh food, and
right. They the Koreans bought a better quality of produce than anybody else. And in fact, I was a reporter editor at the time, and I remember doing a story at the Terminal Market in the Bronx, and about there was some, I guess, the wholesalers who dealt only in fruit and vegetables for the Koreans, because they knew they had to give them a better quality. And the Koreans are the ones who sort of developed, I guess, the salad bar in the grocery thing.
Yep.
Because, you know, if the vegetables and fruit weren't selling and they had to be used, they would have the labor.
Yeah.
In the back, everything would get cut up and put out as a salad bar. Of course, that evolved into a buffet of all, you know, with all kinds of hot and cold food. But that was the original idea.
All right.
All right. So Marshall keeps telling us we're out of time, and I don't.
I think we were out of time about. No, actually, according to my clock, we're right on time,
yeah,
Marshall.
Right on. Yep. I'm just giving Jill the wrap up signal. That's all.
Oh, okay. I know that's it.
It's
all
really
right,
hard
kids.
To figure out sometimes.
We'll speak to you next week.
All right.
Talk to you. And have a great week. Sounds like the weather's going to be good.
Yeah.
Yes.
And love to Mr. Harned.
It's nasty here today.
Yeah, that's what it's nasty.
Sunny. It's sunny here today.
Nasty humid or nasty rainy?
Overcast and cool.
Okay.
And windy and not raining, but whatever.
All right.
Have a great week, everyone.
Okay. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robinhood Radio. As you can hear, Arthur, every Monday, broadcast live and rebroadcast on the weekends as well. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton. Flawless catering and event planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or a sit-down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.